Welcome, everyone, and welcome to Simon, who I'm going to hand over to now.
Good morning. Hello. It's very nice to see you. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Simon Oliver. I'm Methodist minister in the village, but without a Methodist church. Is the mic sounding okay? It's doing a slight... Shall I put it lower down? Higher up? Higher up. Is that okay? Good. No? Just leave it. Okay. Yes, and I work with the community centre in Cottenham. The thing I realised when I was preparing to come this morning is that I haven't been for ages sharing worship with you, because I think I did quite a lot during Kate's maternity leave, but that was ages and ages ago, so I'm sorry I've not seen you. It's also worth me saying that September, the chances of seeing you are going to be less as well in terms of coming and preaching and that kind of stuff, because if you... Some of you will know, and I've chatted to some of you, but as of this September, my project in Cottenham, working with the community centre and young adults, young families, that kind of thing, is continuing, thankfully, for 5 years, which is great news, but it does involve also taking on responsibility of Histon Methodist Church as a part-time role as well. So I'll be like being a sort of proper minister, as well as whatever it is I've been doing the last few years. But prayers would be appreciated for that, and... Of course, ongoing involvement and support for all the other bits and bobs we do as well. Going to begin with a psalm. Now, this is one of my favourite psalms, and I may have read it here before, but I think the psalms are worth repeating. And it's Psalm 13, which is a psalm that begins quite dark and ends quite light. And I like that, and that's something we're going to be considering today. We're thinking about a special story in the Gospels called the Transfiguration, which was we'll get to that later. But it's we're going to be thinking a lot about what we do when we think about the dark and the difficult things in life, but also when we consider the good and positive and God's work in the world as well. So this is Psalm 13 to begin our worship. It says this: How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and day after day have sorrow in my heart? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, Lord my God. Give light to my eyes or I will sleep in death. And my enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. Okay. I need a volunteer, and I'm not going to make you do anything too, like, awful, but I need you to be not too tall. So I need someone that can stand in front of this piece of paper with their arm up, if that makes sense. Come on, have you come on. Yep, okay. Right. Okay. So, this is a... Can you just stand in front of it? You're perfect. Perfect height. This is brilliant. We had this all set up in advance, didn't we? Right. So, this is just to illustrate something. It's something I remembered this week when I was preparing for this week. It's a thing I can remember. So what I need you to do is just to stand with one arm there, one arm up, and just hold it like that. Okay. So, I'm going to draw around you. Because I used to live in Derby, which is a... great part of the world, beautiful hills, which I have missed every day since I've moved to East Anglia. But I used to live in Derby in a very nice little sort of suburb, and it was a very ordinary kind of suburb that I lived in. And so there was houses, there was shops, there was what else do you have in suburbs? That's probably about it, isn't it? But so there was all these things. People, roads, cars, churches, yeah. I'm not looking for that answer, I'm not looking, but that's fine, yeah. Churches, Chinese takeaway, pubs, yeah. So it was all very, very ordinary kind of suburb. And living in a suburb, and I've got nothing against them, I grew up in the suburbs of London, got nothing against them, but you could get... That's good. Can you just show me what else you got? Right. You could get a little bit. Let me just do it. Let's make this pop. Bit cool hair. Little smile. Sort of like you. Okay, you can go and sit back down. Your work is done. Thank you very much. So And the thing about the suburbs, the thing about any place you live or any normal life, is at a certain point you can just get into a bit of a routine, a bit of a habit. You just kind of, you can get very, it can become very, life can be very ordinary and nothing can surprise you anymore. And you don't have to think anymore. You just kind of get on with life and you just, everything's normal and you just plod on. Now one day, this particular suburb near where I lived, I needed to post a letter, and I came to the post box, and rather brilliantly, what somebody had done was they had drawn a letter in chalk on the floor in front of the post box, and then they'd drawn a chalk outline of a person on the floor in the road who'd obviously been trying to pretend that they were trying to post a letter. So there was this kind of image of this person with their letter outstretched and just a kind of splattered person on the floor. Now, this made me, and maybe it's my sense of humour, this made me laugh my head off. I thought it was a brilliant idea because it was just a very ordinary post box, very ordinary street, and here we are, this quite comical image that made you chuckle and made you think. Today we're talking about transfiguration. This link will become more clear as we go on. We're talking about things that transform the way we see the world and the way we think. Now, this thing here was actually quite comical. It just made me laugh. It showed that someone had a sense of humour. But it also made you think, because this here was an outline in the road, it made you think about life and about death. It made you think about being careful, actually, because you can get lulled into a sense of security when you know a place and when you get used to a place. You can get sort of stuck in a certain mindset. It made me think about being careful on the roads. It made me think about life and death. Mainly it made me laugh, I have to say. But this simple little picture, this simple little drawing that someone had probably taken 5 minutes to do, altered the way I thought. It altered the way I saw not just that suburb, but it also altered the way I thought about life and death and things like that for the rest of that day and for a few days afterwards. The story we're thinking about, particularly in the service after the children have gone out as well, but the story we're thinking about today is this weird and amazing story in the gospel about Jesus taking a couple of his disciples up a hill and then up on that mountain, him being completely transformed in how he looked, about him glowing with a bright divine light. About his disciples who had spent so much time with him as an amazing teacher, an amazing person, a kind and loving man, a great teacher, spent so much time with him and thinking, wow, this person is really worth following, suddenly saw that this person was not just a person, not just a kind and amazing person, but somebody who was in his transfiguration, in this transformation, in his glowing, bright and illuminated light, that they saw that this was truly God's son as well, that truly something from God. And that vision, that picture, very different to this one here, but that picture of who Jesus was completely altered the lives of the disciples as they realized this was really somebody worth following forever. And it also altered the way that we, even now, 2,000 years on, when we read the Bible and we see that actually this isn't just a story, this isn't just something about a good man, this is something about God. It alters the way we see God, and it alters the way we see the world as well. And if we take that seriously, God, Jesus really being God's son, then it can't help but shape the way we view ourselves, the way we view our friends and family, the way we view the world and how we act in that world. And those of us that stay in here later on will be thinking a bit more about that, and that's perhaps something for the children and young people to consider as well. We're now going to have our reading from the Gospel today, which is from the book of Matthew, chapter 17, verses 1 to 13.
Matthew, chapter 17, verses 1 to 13. And if you want to read it in the Pew Bibles, it's on page 984. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun, and his clothes became as white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud enveloped them, and a voice from the cloud said, This is my son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. Get up, he said. Don't be afraid. When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, Don't tell anyone what you have seen until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. The disciples asked him, Why then do the teachers of the law say that Elijah must come first? Jesus replied, To be sure, Elijah comes and will restore all things. But I tell you, Elijah has already come, and they did not recognize him, but have done to him everything they wished. In the same way, the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands. Then the disciples understood that he was talking to them about John the Baptist.
When was the last time you felt really close to God? When was the last time you felt something or experienced something of what those close disciples of Jesus experienced on the Mount of Transfiguration? For me, I have to confess, at the moment, it feels like quite a while since I had that really intense experience of God's love and God's presence. It's probably a lot to do with sleep deprivation and having an 18-month-old, very noisy, shouty baby, but there might be more to it than that as well. But it can be difficult to keep on living the Christian life when you feel estranged from God or distant from God. That's why I love Psalms like the Psalm 13 we read earlier on, because they express something of that. The Bible doesn't pretend that everything's okay and that following God and that being loved by God is straightforward. The Transfiguration and that account we've just heard from deals with some of those kind of issues. It deals with that extreme closeness to God, but also points to the suffering which Jesus and John the Baptist and other followers of Jesus are going to endure. When I was talking with Kate about doing the service today, and she said, oh, it's the Transfiguration, I was like, brilliant, I'm sure I've got a sermon prepared on the Transfiguration. No preparation, hooray. And then I looked back through my computer documents and it said, Cottenham Baptist Church, 2013. So I thought, now, I can't remember that many sermons from even a couple of weeks ago, but someone would definitely spot if I was just repeating exactly the same thing. So if you want any biblical background, real in-depth biblical analysis and exegesis on this, you presumably have your notes from my last sermon, and so you can go back to them later on. So that's that covered. But what I wanted to do a bit more of today, and the direction I wanted to take with this story of the Transfiguration, was something a little bit more kind of left field, and really to do with this idea, the actual concept of Transfiguration itself, rather than the specifics of that biblical story. Some dictionaries describe Transfiguration as a complete change of form or appearance into a more beautiful or spiritual state. You might talk in terms of a sort of depressing scene by being transfigured by something positive happening to it. We talk about the power of art to transfigure situations. I've already referred to in a slightly sort of light-hearted manner this idea that this slightly odd, slightly wry, ironic sketch that someone did on the floor in the suburbs next to the post box altered the way that whole street looked for a few days. It altered the way people's perception of that suburb. It altered, and it perhaps, if you were so inclined, got you thinking about some of those bigger issues of life and death. The experience of Lent and the period of Lent which we are in, and different people will celebrate and enter into Lent to different degrees. But those kinds of this period of time is a time when we're really encouraged to alter how we see ourselves and the world, to really enter into the Christian story, to enter into Jesus's experiences. In Jesus's experience in the wilderness, which we attempt to participate in during Lent in some way, we can imagine and we can see that Jesus would have seen the darkest parts of himself. He would have seen the darkest aspects of human existence, the darkness in other people too, what it means to be truly tempted, to truly grapple with your yearnings and your longings and your inclinations, and yet still remain faithful to God. But we also see in this transfiguration, we see the glory, we see the light, we see all the goodness of God revealed in and through Jesus Christ, and the intensity of feeling an experience that would have gone along with that. The Transfiguration story is one that takes place in all of the Gospels, except for John. And the suggestion is, the reason it doesn't take place in John is that the whole of the Gospel of John is a deliberate attempt to say, Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is divine. It's a sustained attempt by the writer of John to say, look, here is God's Son. Here is the revelation of God. Whereas those other Gospels, Matthew, Mark and Luke, they perhaps offer glimpses in the midst of a very human and very real existence of a human Jesus. And they offer those little glimpses, those little hints, those little clues that perhaps there's something more going on here as well. And the Transfiguration, and rightly so, is one of those real moments where we come and we say, oh wow, this isn't just someone caring, this isn't just someone teaching, this isn't just someone healing, there's something bigger, there's something divine going on here. And it's argued, some commentators would argue, that the Transfiguration is actually this sort of focal point for the revelation of the kingdom of God, because it reveals in the presence of Moses and Elijah, it reveals the Old Testament God. It brings together the past, the present, and it points to the future and Jesus's glory in the future as well. But of course, to get to that divine moment, that transfiguration, Jesus had also been through the darkness. And there was, of course, more darkness to come. There was the isolation, the wilderness, the desert. There was, of course, coming up the experience of Holy Week, the Passion, the crucifixion, all kinds of darkness that Jesus would have to endure as well. And Jesus had to pay attention to both the darkness and be aware and open to the light. He had to experience both to reveal something of God. And of course, if we know our Bibles a little, we know that that kind of experience is actually something which is comparable to the prophets and to the psalmists. We know that the psalmists and the prophets, they declare God's greatness and God's divinity, and they declare it with a real clarity and passion and vision, but they don't do it by ignoring the darkness of human existence. The prophets and the psalmists, they have often experienced the absence of God. They've often seen the darkest that human beings are capable of, but they still choose to follow that call to describe the goodness and the light and the greatness that God brings. And again, I refer back to that Psalm 13, which has that real, how long you've abandoned me, God, you've left me, God, I'm all alone here. And yet, pushing through that, the psalmist goes on to describe the goodness and the faithfulness of God. So the challenge for us, and always, and for me as well, and is that how do we hold on? How do we balance the tension between that darkness and the light? How do we live with that those times of absent God's absence, whilst also celebrating those times where we know God's clearly with us? God's revelation is just abundant and apparent. One of my favourite poets, and I cannot claim to understand probably 2/3 of his poetry, but is Seamus Heaney. And Seamus Heaney, in many ways, saw his vocation, and I think he wouldn't necessarily identify this himself, but his vocation as a poet in quite similar terms to the vocation of a prophet or to the way Jesus entered into this idea of darkness and light. For those of you that aren't aware, and I'm not a Seamus Heaney expert at all, but I know a little about him. His time as a poet in Northern Ireland was primarily over the period of the Troubles, sectarian difficulties, violence, really split religious experiences and cultural differences between Protestants and Catholics. And Seamus Heaney chose to enter into describing that darkness. He chose to try to really grapple with it, to describe the experiences of people, to describe what was going on, to really be a poet of those troubles. And yet, he also continued to remain open to glimpses of hope. He refused to give in to despair and opened up that possibility of light, opened up that possibility of hope. And so I think in his model of seeing, of entering into the world and grappling with the horror of that human beings are sometimes capable of, and yet also remaining hopeful and allowing glimpses and little sparks of light to come in, again, he presents a model like the prophets and like some of Jesus's ministry that says, yes, we can hold these two things in tension. And he also grappled with what it means to be role the Christian faith and spirituality plays in a time when there's so much doubt and despair and scepticism. He's got this wonderful poem called In Galerus Oratory, and it's about this little going into these little old peat bog, sort of dark chapels on the edge of Ireland, and what it must have been like in the days gone by to try and grapple with the Christian faith in times of darkness. And it says it here, and I'm not a poetry expert, but it does say something about the possibility of entering into the darkness and also revelation of light. It says, you can still feel the community pack this place. It's like going into a turf stack, a core of old dark walled up with stone, a yard thick. When you're in it alone, you might have dropped a reduced creature to the heart of the globe. No worshipper would leap up to his God off this floor. Founded there like heroes in a barrow, they sought themselves in the eye of their king, under the black weight of their own breathing. And how he smiled on them as out they came, the sea a censer and the grass a flame. This idea that if we look into the darkness, if we can grapple with the darkness, if we can come before God in the darkness, then something bigger, something of light and of goodness and of God might also be present and also reveal itself to us. The disciples and Jesus had been through difficult times, and there was definitely difficult times to come. But in this transfiguration moment, light is revealed from above. And I do think our call as Christians living in the world today is that we don't ignore the darkness. We have to live it, we have to describe it, we have to approach it with honesty. But we have to also keep on trusting and hoping that through our wrestling, through our prayers, through our praise, that we might encounter God both in the midst of that suffering and also when we come out the other side. And I wonder, again, as I asked earlier, where we are in relation to these kind of things. Do we feel very close to God at present? Or does God feel very distant? Do we feel buoyed by the presence and reality of God? Or do we feel like we're going through a time of pain and suffering? Again, I don't think the Bible offers straightforward responses to that. It doesn't say, if you just do this, everything will be okay. If you say this prayer, all will be well. But it does show to us in the ministry of the prophets, in the psalmists, in the life and ministry of Jesus, it does show to us that through our suffering, God might be glimpsed. That through the dark times, lightness may appear. And Lent is a time in which we sometimes, some of us, deliberately seek to do that. It's a discipline where we in some ways enter into Jesus's struggles and Jesus's suffering and Jesus's darkness. But then for some of us, maybe that even is too much to bear. And actually, it just might be that day-to-day life is a place in which God's absence is something that which we are grappling with. So we've got two challenges, I think. I think this idea of transfiguration, this idea of seeing God in the darkness, offers us two challenges. It gives us a challenge to actually, if we're going through a dark time, to really keep going, to really look at that darkness. If we're suffering, to engage with it. Not to just endure it, but to engage with it. And like Seamus Heaney chronicling the troubles in Northern Ireland, to really take stock and to try and make sense of it through really grappling with it and through going through it. And we can pull on those psalms and those prophets and say, my God, why have you forsaken me? How long will you forget me, Lord? We can enter into our prayers through the psalms and through those passages of scripture which give us that vocabulary to grapple with God. So we can consider the darkness, but also we must consider the light. Again, the end of Psalm 13 says, the psalmist says, I will sing your praises. You are a faithful God. You are present with me. And so we must consider the light. We must consider those moments, those points where Jesus, where God is very, very present and apparent to us. And during Lent, we see that it is actually God's nature to be with us in those sufferings and to be with us in our joy. We see through Lent that God is a self-emptying God. God is a God who gives up all the glory to be with us, to be present to us in Jesus Christ. But we see that he doesn't just suffer in those human ways, but he brings a divine redemptive power and love. And that through that divine redemptive power and love brought to us in Jesus, we too may be wrapped up in that story. So let's consider the darkness, but let's too consider the light. And let's believe that in the considering that darkness and in considering that light, we might be transfigured, that we might be transformed in our Christian life. The final thing I wanted us to go off at a bit of a tangent about this in some ways, although it feeds into the same thing, is for me about the power that art can play in transfiguration, by which I mean visual arts, music, literature, poetry, movies, all kind of arts. I really believe that art has the power to change and to transform, to open us up to new experiences, to reveal something of God's truth in the world. And it's why so much of the kind of ministry I'm involved in at the community centre and other things is to do with the arts, to do with music, poetry, films. It's because I believe that it opens us up as human beings to the big stuff of life. There'll be some of you that think, okay, yep, I can get on board with that. Others that perhaps think it doesn't have that kind of role to play, and that's okay. And John's very kindly organised a couple of pictures for us to look at related to this idea of darkness and light and transfiguration. Tracy Emin, another person I really love as an artist, like Seamus Heaney, but can't claim to be an expert on. Tracy Emin is someone I would argue has really entered into the darkness of life. This is quite a famous piece of hers, which I think is now destroyed, but called Everyone I Have Ever Slept With, 1963 to 1995. Some of you may remember some of there's been certain scandal around with it, but it included lovers, it included family members, it included her unborn children, it wasn't about purely about sex, but it was about people that she had shared intimacy with. But also within that, a great deal of loss was expressed. And a lot of Tracy Emin's work deals with those dark themes. I do think by facing it and by bringing it out and by expressing it creatively, she does something quite incredible. Next slide is really interesting. You might not be able to read it, but she was commissioned to do something for a piece for Liverpool Cathedral. And she went in, and I've read an interview with her about this. She went in and she sat in there and spent some time there. And she was surrounded by, of course, the Bible, by the all the incredible words, by choral music, by the stained glass windows, which told the great stories and the great works of the prophets and the saints and the gospels and all that kind of stuff. And she and this phrase came to her, which was, I felt you and knew that you loved me. And she simply and that's what it says along the bottom, I felt you and I knew that you loved me. which I just found incredible. And she's not necessarily an artist who would profess a Christian, an explicit Christian faith. Some people love that. Some people think it's offensive. But to me, in some ways, that she's caught a glimpse of something there. In the midst of all the words, the images, the buildings, the history, the heritage, she caught something, a glimpse of light about what a relationship with God might be like. I think Tracy Emin is someone who grapples with the dark and tries to see the light as well. Other things, public art is a really incredible thing. We've got the next picture here of the Angel of the North, which some of us may have driven past. For me, I think this is just a wonderful example of how, I was going to say simple piece of art, it's clearly a bit of an epic undertaking, but how something visual, something artistic, something slightly enigmatic and ambiguous can really transform a landscape. And you can't drive up the, I can't remember what it is now, is it A1 or AMITS or? Anyway, M1. Can't drive, A1, I thought it was A1, yeah. Can't drive past it without your view being taken up by this incredible angel, and then the thoughts and the things which flood through as a result of that. Next one, please. If anyone's been to Chicago, I was fortunate enough to spend a summer in Chicago a few years ago. Anish Kapoor does this bizarre and amazing, it looks like an enormous beam, but reflective in the middle of the city. And it's just, again, some people think it's a ridiculous, bulbous, strange thing. But for me, you go and you can walk under it, you can walk around it. You see yourself differently in it. You see other people. The whole city is transformed and reflected. As the night comes in, the lights from all the cars and things come in. And it just, it completely, if you choose to open yourself up to it, it alters your perception of the world that you function in. It alters your perception of yourself and of the city that you're surrounded by. So again, an amazing way that art can transfigure by if you open yourself up to it, can really make you see things differently and help you to see things differently. Final few slides. Banksy, who some of you will have come across, has started with some interesting sort of slightly silly art in the UK, but has recently done some stuff, as you'll see when we do the next one, in Gaza, where he has, no one's quite sure how he manages to make this stuff happen, but has gone to Gaza and done, and if you could see the next couple of as well, and the final one, and done some amazing provocative works of art, where he's in some ways there's irony. There's an amazing one he's done, which is just an enormous kitten on the wall in Gaza, where he's on a, which is partially rubble and partially remains, and he said, the reason is because all people do when they go on the internet is look up pictures of kittens. And there's all this world out there which we ignore, and yet people want to show kittens. So he did this big kitten, which managed to offend the people of Gaza and people who were sort of viewing it on the internet. But there's this idea that by playing with people's perceptions of the world, this is like supposed to be like an army, a kind of guard turret with children swinging around it as well. If you can harness the creativity available to us in art, you can again alter people's perspective of the world, and our own views are altered. Our ideas of innocence and loss, our ideas of peace and justice. Again, I think that kitten one's particularly the idea of how were we complicit in injustice from a distance, that we can see everything that's going on in the world from thousands of miles away, and we spend our time looking at pictures of kittens instead of being involved in massive issues of peace and justice. And I'm very, I'm not interested in kittens, but I'm very aware of the things which occupy my time and which occupy my thoughts. And so again, someone like Banksy can alter our perspective, and of course can transfigure a scene. He can make a scene of real devastation into something provocative and life-affirming and challenging to those that see it. So I suppose that's my little kind of coda to the idea of the transfiguration that can go on in our lives through entering into darkness and opening ourselves up to the light available in Jesus Christ. I suppose that, for me, challenges us about the power of art to transfigure, to transform, the power of art to describe the darkness, but also to reveal hope. It presents, for me as a Christian, a challenge as how I might participate in the arts. How do I use the arts, and use, I think, is a dangerous word, but how do I engage with the arts in my ministry, and how do we engage with the arts as Christians and as churches? But this whole thing, I think, also raises a question of to what degree are we, as Christians, working for the transfiguration of others? To what degree are we seeking the transformation of people, of relationships, of the church, of communities? To what degree are we prepared to participate in transfiguring, transforming systems of power and abuse? International Women's Day was celebrated recently, and of course we're conscious that we still live in a world of great cultural and systemic problems with how the balance of power and equality. To what degree are we going to involve ourselves in issues of race, inequality, the divides between rich and poor? To what degree are we prepared to use the arts, social justice, education, engage with people who building work, planning work, community work? To what degree do we see our role and the role of the church as being a force for good, an institution that has the capacity to transfigure and to transform the world in which we live? I find it really exciting that in a few weeks' time, both an Alpha course and the food bank are launching in Cottenham. That is still happening the same week, is it? Good. Even if it wasn't the same week, I think it would still be great. But the idea that Christians in Cottenham have, in some ways, seen what we're talking about today, have seen some of the darkness, have seen the poverty and the hunger, literal poverty, literal hunger that's going on, and said, as God's people, we can't help but try and transform that. And also people have seen what it means to be isolated from God and say, actually, we can give people opportunity to explore what a relationship with God might look like through the Alpha course. I think that begins to get at some of the things we're talking about today. I think there's more to it. And we each have to figure that out for ourselves and in community. I think there's more to it. But that idea that we can be a force for good, that we can look at the dark things in the world and see God at work in it and try and be part of God's response to that. And also we can continue to try and offer glimpses of light to ourselves and to others as well. So it's been a little bit circuitous and rambling, and I've realised I've probably thrown a few too many ideas and a few too many artists in your direction, and I'm happy to talk about anything afterwards which you agree with or disagree with or would like a bit more sense about, or kind of draw out what I've been trying to get at. But I do hope and I do pray this morning that whether we're going through the darkest of times or whether we're open to the true, whether we're open to all sorts of light that God is at work at in our lives, my prayer is that we would know something of God's transfiguring power, something of God's transformative power, and something of the revelation of God's love and peace which comes to us in Jesus Christ. Let's pray.